Hello and welcome to volume 136 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue, we'll discuss the experiences of a new hunter. We'll talk about a hunting app that you may find useful. We'll discuss the changes to the H-2B visa program and how it may affect forest workers. And we'll discuss some tax and estate planning workshops you can attend. This program is brought to you through the generous contribution of Forester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with consulting foresters. You can access the site through foresterssearch.com, or there's a link on this page, and you'll be given a roster of consulting foresters who can guide you through the next steps that you'll face as a forest landowner. I'm Hayes Brown with the Alabama Forest Owners Association, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Robert Tufts is a frequent guest on Capital Ideas Live. He presents workshops across the state that can cover timber tax and estate planning. So welcome back, Robert.
Well, thank you, Hayes.
I see you have several programs available for landowners. One of them is called the Timber Tax Program. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. I did this program back in 2016 at several locations for tax preparers. And it was interesting, only 5 out of 200 had ever filed a Form T. So although the Form T is optional for occasional timber harvesting, the IRS does require that the taxpayer keep equivalent information. The first request in the IRS Audit Techniques Guide is the Form T. So if you're required to have the information, why not keep it in the IRS-approved format?
Okay, makes sense. What else are you going to cover on the timber tax program?
We're going to discuss whether your timber property is a business, investment, or hobby, which will determine what expenses you may deduct and when. We'll talk about acquiring land and basis allocation, why you should use timber accounts or separately identifiable properties, calculation of depletion allowance, reporting timber sale income, deducting reforestation expenses, and how to handle other miscellaneous expense items.
Okay. When's the program going to be offered, and how long is each program?
I'm currently offering it three times, July 23rd, August 11th, and September 17th. It's a seven-hour program, and it's eligible for Category 1 continuing education, both through SAF and the Alabama Board of Registration for Foresters.
Okay. People may ask whether this is a live program or a Zoom.
It is a Zoom program, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you also have two estate planning programs. Is estate planning for landowners any different from any other taxpayer?
Okay. So first, everyone ought to have an estate plan. It's always more expensive to die without a will than the cost of preparing one. So in the basic estate planning program, I explain the three documents you should have in your plan: the advance directive for health care, a power of attorney, and a will. Landowners, though, have an additional concern. So if Dad had 300 acres and three children, and his will left everything to the children equally, how many acres does each child have? And the answer is 300. To make them equal, they get an undivided one-third interest in the entire property. This means they have to jointly agree on the management objectives. And the typical family will end up with one or more children interested in the land and one or more who live in town and are more interested in a new house. So if the children can't agree, the only remedy is partition, and that usually ends up in a court-ordered sale of the property. So landowners may want to consider using a business entity or a trust to hold the property to prevent partition and also direct the future use of the property.
Okay. Well, thank you, Robert. We've got those dates on the website there, and I hope many will be able to attend that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hayes.
More and more you hear about the satisfaction that you gain from knowing where your food comes from. Kim Martin recently wrote about this in the Quality Deer Management Association magazine. Welcome, Kim.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're a new hunter, but what made you give hunting a try?
So I grew up in Michigan in a non-hunting family, but we lived in a really small rural community, so it was common. Grew up doing the typical Michigan things, camping, hiking, and as I got older, I was kind of finding my own ways to take adventures and did a lot of backpacking, and the outdoors have always been a special place to me. After I graduated with my degree in food science from Michigan State, I started my career as a food safety inspector with the state of Michigan. So that job gives you a lot of firsthand experiences and where your food's coming from, and that's including meat. I remember one specific day I was doing an inspection of a meat processing facility that also had a kill floor, and the sights and the sounds of the slaughter operation were really just a wake-up call that I was still uncomfortable with the reality of taking a life to feed myself. I always knew that there was kind of a disconnect in my head with the steps that it takes to get the meat onto the retail shelves, but kind of experiencing it close up was different. At that point, I decided that if I was going to be a meat eater, then I would do what I could to get that meat myself.
What challenges did you face when you prepared for your first hunting season?
So after my hunter safety certification, spring turkey seemed like a good place to start. And in the beginning, I felt so overwhelmed by all the questions I had. I had no hunting experience and no experience handling firearms. I remember at one point I thought, how do I get these turkeys to come to me? And so I did some research, and the thought of like calling in a turkey never even crossed my mind. So that's how much I was completely starting from scratch. I also didn't have any family members to help me, guide me along the way, or give me advice. So it was intimidating to not have those traditions that a lot of first-time hunters have. And the reality of having to hunt public land was also like heavy on my mind. I recently moved to northern Michigan. I don't have any property. I was new to the area, so I didn't know very many people. So I wasn't really comfortable with trying to make any sort of connections like that. And then the idea of hunting public land I was kind of nervous about. And then the idea of hunting public land as a first-time hunter by myself was also very intimidating.
Well, how did it turn out? What was the results of your first hunt?
So in the end, I wasn't able to get a bird. The week-long season was a lot of mixed emotions. I was excited and nervous, but mostly frustrated. I'm sure if you ask any turkey hunter, they'll probably say the same thing. They can be a challenge, and they're really sneaky. I had a feeling that it wasn't going to be easy, and there was a chance that I was going to end the season without a bird. But in the end, I felt like I learned a lot of lessons. I feel like hunting has given me a deeper respect for sportsmen and sportswomen and for the wildlife that we hunt. Sometimes the first time for anything can be the most difficult and the most intimidating, so I'm really glad I finally took the plunge. And I can say with certainty that I'll continue to hunt and hopefully someday be able to pass those traditions along to other hunters.
Yeah, well, thank you, Kim. We appreciate that. Lanford Holloway is the CEO of TerraStride, the company that created HuntStand Pro. It's an app that provides mapping and ownership information, and it's available to AFOA members at a discount. Hello, Lanford.
Hey, thanks for having me.
HuntStand Pro does a lot of things. What are some of the features that you think might be particularly helpful to AFOA members?
That's a great question. There are several things. First and foremost, you can create maps that include all the objects of interest, as we call it, in a particular hunt area. And a hunt area is kind of a term we use in the app. It basically means a map title, so an area in which you hunt, literally. And these types of objects would include things like stands and blinds, roads and trails, property boundaries, feeders, sign-in boards, gates, basically anything that a hunter might care about and that they might need to know where it's located. And then you can share that custom map you've created with your fellow Hunt Club members. And any changes that anyone makes on the map will be shown to all the members that have access to that map in real time. So you always know where things are. There's no more where's the stand or where's the feeder or where's the trail camera. You can tag all those things. We also have extremely accurate distance and area measurement tools. These are very helpful if you're trying to range a shot or if you're trying to determine how much seed or fertilizer is needed for a food plot, for example. Furthermore, we also provide access to the most comprehensive database of public and private land in the country. No other hunting app even comes close, and we charge a fraction of what some of the other hunting apps do. And finally, we're putting the finishing touches on a stand reservation system, and that'll be out in about a month. And that system will allow our users to reserve stands and, of course, to see, you know, who else has reserved a stand, so who is hunting where. This really helps with club management, and it also provides an added layer of safety for our users.
I know that you started a map printing service recently. What's different about your system?
Well, there are a couple other players that print maps. And without getting too technical, what they all do is they take a screenshot and then kind of blow it off. And that, you know, if you're trying to create a large format print, ends up looking really pixelated and terrible. So we created a process in-house where we can get every bit of image clarity. So we can print a map that's 4 feet by 4 feet, and every inch will be as clear as if you zoomed in as far as you possibly could on your computer or your phone. And so we started this process with the goal to create maps that were at least twice the resolution and half the price of our competitors. And I'm happy to say that we're able to achieve both those things. So once the map is made in HuntStand in the way that I've described above, you can order the map and it'll be on your doorstep in a few days. And we offer our maps in various materials, some of which are great for hanging on the wall, and others, like our canvas map, are great for infield use. All maps are waterproof and fade resistant.
Okay. There's a number of hunting apps on the market. Just in summary, why do you think that HuntStand Pro stands apart?
In short, we understand Eastern hunting and lease hunting far better than any other software company that's out there. As I said, there are some other hunting apps, but HuntStand was built from the ground up to be a hunting and land management app. And that means that our software is especially well-suited to the kind of hunting that people do in your part of the country.
Okay. Well, thanks, Lanford. We appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Many forest workers work in the U.S. through the H-2B visa program. There have been some changes in the program in the last few weeks. Deb Hawkins, president of Forest Resources Association, can explain. Welcome, Deb.
Hi, yes. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Can you describe first what the H-2B visa program is and why it is important to the forest products industry?
Sure. The H-2B program is important to the industry because public and private forest lands rely heavily on this non-immigrant labor, which is seasonal temporary workers, who come in and provide essential services that help to sustain the health and viability of our nation's forests. In fact, forestry uses about 15% of the 66,000 H-2B workers that are allowed to come in the United States each year. That's the cap that we have to all work in with a number of different industries that use these workers. And U.S. Forest Service reports that every year, the estimate is that more than 1.6 billion trees are planted on over 2.6 million acres of public and private forest lands across the U.S., which is based on DOL data, you know, we see that that's about 23 states in every, you know, region in the United States. So it's a significant amount of work that they do for us, and they ensure that our trees are planted, seed collection occurs, herbicide application, brush clearing, fire suppression. So just a number of critical things that need to happen to keep our forests sustainable.
Recently, President Trump issued a proclamation that suspended immigration for a period of time. How does this affect the H-2B forest workers in doing forestry work?
Well, the president's proclamation suspends entry of H-2B guest workers for the remainder of the year. We fought that hard trying to keep forestry out of that, and we're, you know, kind of waiting to see what might happen. But the impact, if things stay as they are now, the impact will be on the fall planting season. So the suspension does allow exemption for some essential workers, and there is a category in that, you know, these workers who perform national interest type work are those workers that are necessary to facilitate the immediate and continued economic recovery of the United States. So best case is H-2B workers are included in the criteria that defines workers of national interest and exempted from the suspension. That's what we're hoping for. Guidance will be out shortly, and if that does not occur, and if our worker, these forestry workers are looped in. The suspension took place June 24th, and it will stay in place till at least the end of December. So unless U.S. workers are interested in filling these positions, which has not been the case in the past, or other H-2B workers currently in the United States become available, contractors will miss the fall planting season. So that, you know, that could take several years to catch up. So we know currently contractors are testing the U.S. labor market right now, advertising for jobs, and, you know, that's a step they have to do anyway, whenever they're, you know, looking to bring in non-immigrant labor. And I think this effort is going to be very valuable for us because we've often, you know, shared that the U.S. workers do not want these jobs. And in a pandemic like this with such high unemployment, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And if they do come forward and take the jobs, or if we're faced with the same results that we've seen in the past.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Deb. That's all the time we have for this issue. We appreciate the contributions of Robert Tufts, Kim Martin, Lanford Holloway, and Deb Hawkinson. I spoke with a gentleman who recently purchased a forest property that he described as not very good for tree growing. He explained that the land had other aspects that he found appealing, including a beaver dam. This confused me because I thought beaver dams were bad. They drown your trees, make it impossible to travel. They provide a haven for snakes, mosquitoes, and other scary things. So how is this a good thing? The answer is that he saw something others didn't. Habitat for forest creatures, both scary and non-scary. An excuse to improve habitat for birds. And the chance to own something that is constantly changing. It's just the process of seeing things from a new perspective. Is this something you have experienced as you get older? What you thought was valueless now becomes valued and cherished. I think we can all identify with this man as he enjoys his new forest land in new ways. On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown. Thank you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.